Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Guys, we have a very exciting announcement this week. We are going to Australia and New Zealand.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Auckland is actually in New Zealand, not Australia.
That's right, guys. We are taking a little summer vacation in December. We will be in Perth December 8th. We'll be in Brisbane December 11th.
Brizzy, someone actually commented, I just can't imagine Lauren in Brisbane. You'll understand that later. Continue.
Okay, I'm scared. Sydney December 12th, Melbourne December 14th, and we will be in Auckland December 15th.
Which is in New Zealand. Please come, guys. We are so excited about this tour, and we can't wait to see you all.
And if you're feeling left out and happen to live on the West Coast, we are coming to you in a mere matter of weeks. That's right. We'll be in San Francisco June 16th. Chell, do you know that that's Father's Day?
I did.
And then the next day we'll be in Portland on June 17th, Seattle June 18th, and Angelino fuckettes, we will be at the Bourbon Room. That is Hollywood. We are not making you drive downtown.
Yeah, we literally said no to that theater because we love you guys.
So we will be in Hollywood at the Bourbon Room June 28th and June 29th. That's a Friday and a Saturday. Come out, make it a weekend. We hope to see you guys there. And now let's get into the episode.
I spent $40,000 on shoes.
What's the matter, Morty?
Moral, the thing.
Can't you buy our whole dress?
Moral, the thing.
Great gowns.
Moral,
beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to a brand new episode of the Every Outfit Podcast. Chelsea, what do you think about our new dig?
I love it. I'm at Lauren's new house for the first time. We're recording in her closet. How exciting. You have a walk-in closet.
Yes. I think when I texted you yesterday and said, okay, we could record at my house, but only in the closet. I think that's the only room that has enough stuff to suck up all the sound.
Very Carrie Bradshaw.
Yes. This move has been a searing indictment of my consumption over the last decade, for sure. Like, do I need all of this stuff? I don't know.
Look, I believe in a closet purge personally.
I know, but I have this guilt with some of the stuff. This might be a good VIP episode, although horrible for the audio medium. Basically, it's what not to wear, but with you and me, and you're just judging my closet.
I would love to do that.
Anyway, Chelsea, we were off last week because I was moving, but you were also away.
Yeah, I went up north and visited my parents, which was lovely. Went up for Mother's Day, hung out with my friends from high school. Lovely, wholesome fun.
I'm glad you had a very good time, Chelsea, but can we discuss that there was a mishap when you went to the airport?
Okay, that was so long ago that I have completely forgotten about it. Guys, the most fucked up thing happened to me.
I just assumed that flights within California are just possible always. I did not realize that literally up until 2 years ago, there was no direct flight from Los Angeles to where you grew up.
No. No, there used to be back in the day, but they got rid of it. It's when you live in a small rural area, it's fucked. But now there is an airline, Avelo Airlines, the Spirit Airlines of my life.
Of the Pacific Northwest.
Guys, this is what happened. So my mom's like, what time are you flying in? I look at the calendar and it's like 5:30 a.m. And I'm like, oh, shit, that is an unusually early flight, but whatever. It's usually a 7 a.m. flight. I go to the airport at like 4:30. No one is there. The airport isn't open. Guys, it wasn't even me being a fucking idiot, like inputting it incorrectly into my calendar. From the source email, it imported my flight information incorrectly. So it was a.m. instead of p.m. I was flying out at 5:30 p.m.
This is my favorite thing is I woke up that morning to a series of text messages from Chelsea. But when someone sends you a series of text messages, especially when you have your phone on Do Not Disturb, you get the last one first. So the first one I received, Chelsea, was, well, fuck it. At least I'm not the only one to have made this mistake. And then I go up and I go, okay, what on earth happened?
Oh, yeah, there was some other girl there that the same thing happened to.
At 5:11 in the morning, I receive a selfie text message from Chelsea going, me outside the closed Burbank airport at 4:30. Flight is at 5:30, but it's not my fault. Then to prove her point, she sent me a screenshot of her calendar invite. This is how it was added to my calendar, automatically pulled from my email. So fucked up. There was another woman there who I assumed the same thing happened to. Did you not talk to her?
She was on the phone and getting into an Uber. So yeah, I'm just glad it wasn't my fault because that would have been embarrassing.
Moving on, because we have so much to get to in our slight sabbatical, and just like that started filming.
Sarah Jessica Parker is causing a stir in the West Village yet again, and not because she's working a retail job at her own shoe store.
And Gramercy Park, let us not forget. It would seem that Carrie still has that townhouse in Gramercy Park.
Yes.
This is touchy for a multitude of reasons. We have fuckettes that love what we talk about when the season is filming. We have other fuckettes who say no spoilers, to which I kind of say, what do you want us to do? They are filming out in these streets. There are constant Daily Mail, New York Post. We're getting DMs from fuckettes in New York who are like, I just passed Aiden screaming on the street.
Let's start with the return of Aiden. So I guess he never went away.
What was captured by someone on the streets of Gramercy Park was a scene where Aiden has what seems to be a weekender bag and he's yelling at the window and runs up the stairs.
Babes, you blew it. Bye. I just don't understand why he's back already. I don't need him to be there at all. Like, have them be together or have him actually follow through with his breakup, which was the cliffhanger of last season.
Right. So Sarah Jessica Parker briefly appeared at the Warner Brothers Discovery upfronts, and she said about Aiden's role in the next series, she said, it's time for her, being Carrie Bradshaw, to commit more to being the relevant person she wants to be. So what does that mean, and where might that take a person? Aiden plays a somewhat significant role in the answer to that question. Mwah. Wonderful word salad from Sarah Jessica Parker. That really means nothing, but, you know, we didn't have to wait long. Obviously, we're going to see Aiden in some capacity, but I hope this means Carrie's like, oh,
you're trash.
Not only you're trash, but like, hey, Charlotte, remember when you said in season 4 you only have two great loves? Like, fuck that. You're right, but fuck these two great loves. I'm on my own.
I personally don't need Aiden, but obviously this is beyond our control.
I promise that I'm going to go into this third season with an optimistic outlook, mostly because my family and doctors have indicated they nor I can take another year of me, quote, being like this. So
yes, I think that we should be more generous. I think we have been generous, but I think we could be more generous. I think the Aiden thing threw us both a little just because of how the last season ended. Anyway, shall we talk about some of Carrie's outfits?
Look, at the very least, we're getting a quirky Carrie back.
We got an incredible Simone Rocha look. which was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Props to Molly and Danny.
It's the see-through dress with the roses. As soon as we saw it on the runway, it's something that we hope that she would wear on the show, and we're getting it. So look, positive thing. Aiden back? Eh. Simone Rocha? Yes.
And with the visible panty line, which is such a Carrie thing.
Oh, that's right. Carrie, we're getting visible bra again.
And panties. And she looks so amazing in it, truly. But I think some of the other looks were a bit more divisive. I wasn't totally sold on the first one, the pussy bow blouse. Felt a little bit Republican, little bit like Nancy Reagan in Palm Beach vibes.
Again, I'm taking an optimistic outlook, so I'm hoping that it makes sense in the context of the scene. Maybe she's at a political fundraiser for reasons unknown.
I don't think so. She's hanging out with Rock and Lily, but I feel like the outfit that got the most attention was the vintage Aussie Clark dress with the ginormous gingham hat.
The gingham hat was very divisive amongst people.
Yes, it's designed by Mariam Kahani, who's totally genius, incredible designer, weirdly also incredible ceramicist. But yes, a very extreme thing for someone to wear in their day-to-day life, just given the scale of it.
We're getting kooky Carrie, which makes sense. I mean, I think that a lot of the first two seasons of her style were a little bit tamped down. I do feel like this is who Carrie Bradshaw would be in her 50s with the money that she has from Mr. Big.
Yes, but on Sex and the City, while she wore crazy hats, she never wore huge hats. And that's been a very and just like that thing. Like, remember when she wore that like giant like straw hat with the purple fabric when she was in that CGI apartment that she randomly bought in that one episode?
Right, and the Victorian hat that Molly had a fight with Michael Patrick King for the season finale of the first season that they then put in the second season.
Yeah, and also that pink floral one, also very Palm Beach, that she wore after she had surgery.
But I feel like that makes sense of, as Carrie becomes a woman of a certain age, she goes from like the floral brooches to a large hat.
I don't know. I question the reality of a hat that large on a woman that small.
In a city like Manhattan.
I just think of Carrie as being a small hat person, so sue me.
Nice hat.
Tiny little hats.
Maybe she got burned from that time that Berger burned her with the nice hat comment.
Well, he would really not like this hat.
If this has been a long con because they're bringing Berger back to deliver more insults about her hats, then I'm in.
But I did love the choice of dress. I love Aussie Clark, although it's very boho. It's very like something that Joanna Newsom would wear, right, kind of thing. Although it does feel legit in a sense because that's a brand that it girls love, and Carrie definitely has $3,000 to spend on a vintage Aussie Clark dress from Resurrection or whatever with that Mr. Big inheritance.
By the way, a scene I would love to see with Rock and Lily. I don't know if you saw another quote that was going around that came from Sarah Jessica Parker's brief appearance at the upfronts. Is she was asked what advice she would give Carrie Bradshaw, and she said, she explained what viewers all scream at the screen every time they do a rewatch, quote, don't have an affair, don't lose Aiden's beloved dog, and get a financial planner. It's hard to say if that's her advice for Carrie, or it's like,
yeah, that's definitely not what I'm thinking about.
Or she feels upon retrospect, that's what she gets yelled at in the streets, to not have an affair and to not lose Aiden's dog is a very specific.
Clearly she needed to have that affair. The Pete thing wasn't really on her, to be fair. Like, yes, she was going out to see Mr. Big, but like, she wasn't negligent with the dog, actually. And she clearly also didn't need a financial planner because she's loaded now. So it literally all worked out. And that is not an uncommon economic strategy to be a it girl fashion girl and marry a real estate guy.
The losing Aiden's dog feels worse. It's a worse crime or moral crime in retrospect, right? Because in the moment, Pete comes back, Aiden finds him, is what you're led to believe happens between scenes. But I feel like Aiden, once Carrie has divulge that she's been having an affair with Mr. Big, that when you're putting two and two together, you then realize after the fact that, oh, the only reason this woman who doesn't like my dog took the dog out for a walk is because she was seeing her side piece.
Yes. Okay, so other and just like that news, Sherry O'Terry is in at least one episode. She posted photos with Mario Cantone.
Yes. From her Instagram post, it seems like she has scenes with Anthony and Seema, which I don't love that seemingly we are continuing the trend of giving supporting characters their own supporting characters, but I do love Sherry O'Terry, so I'm here for this.
Yes. Look, it's not like we have a thing against all supporting characters. I am completely down for Che's boss at the veterinarian's clinic to have her own arc.
It just becomes a lot of characters. We're quadrupling the cast list, it seems, every season.
Okay, also we need to talk about the Rosie O'Donnell of it all, because SJP was on one of those morning shows and she said that Rosie O'Donnell is in an episode. So not a series regular, as we suspected, and hopefully a girlfriend of the week for Miss Miranda Hobbs.
Fingers crossed. I mean, we also know that she's in And Just Like That because in this New York Times piece...
Oh my God.
That profiles Rosie O'Donnell and her friendship with Michael Cohen. The article ends with her being like, gotta go back to New York to shoot And Just Like That.
The New York Times actually snapped with that one. Like, when I saw it come up, I was like, oh, I am in.
Well, you want to talk about a piece that seems like out of New York Magazine but comes from the New York Times.
Tell me about this prison friendship that was established between Michael Cohen and Rosie O'Donnell. Basically, what happened is, as we know, Michael Cohen was involved in smearing Rosie O'Donnell along with Trump, conspiring with Trump, whatever. Then when he went to jail, Rosie O'Donnell started writing him letters and they struck up a jail friendship. I also love that the article notes that she hadn't visited anyone in jail since Martha Stewart.
Which, while I was reading this article, is all I could think about. There's one thing that Rosie O'Donnell loves, and that's an underdog.
Well, she loves to fix people also.
Well, and she loves to send text messages to people that are down on their luck, as she did to Michael Cohen, which she texted him, breathe, relax, tell the truth. You got this. I love you.
Yes, when he was testifying, I believe was the context for that, right?
Yes, against Trump. But also, please understand that between every word of that text message or every phrase, there's just a dash.
Yeah, if you follow Rosie O'Donnell on social media, you know she has a very specific style of grammar that she uses.
But Michael Cohen wrote back, thank you and truly love you.
This is peak Long Island culture right here.
Well, but that's the other thing that you get from this article is I didn't understand the origin of Rosie O'Donnell's feud with Donald Trump and how it starts with shooting A League of Their Own and hearing this rumor that Madonna went on a date with Donald Trump. And Madonna goes, I never did. He just made that up. And that's what Rosie
realizes.
That's
the origin.
Yes, that he lies about everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems to be platonic love affair that is born from two people who were born and raised in Long Island. And that's that's a bond that I read about a lot among celebrities, but I don't understand myself.
I think it's very wholesome. And I enjoyed this article quite a bit. And with regards to Trump, as we've said before, Rosie O'Donnell has always been on the right side of history. She's always been ahead of the curve, except when it comes to that Clay Aitken, Kelly Ripa situation.
But everything else, correct. I don't know if we were together, because we were recently watching a bunch of old Rosie O'Donnell clips, but when she went to go visit Martha Stewart, she did not want to look too good. So for whatever reason, she decided to not shower and dress horribly, only to, behind the glass, Martha Stewart comes out and she's completely pristine, got her highlights done.
She smuggled that La Mer into prison.
But I just love that Rosie goes method when visiting people in prison. She's like, they're probably at their worst, so I should also be at my worst.
She's such a real one. I love her. Moving on, though, we have so much It Girl news this week. The dock is bursting.
That frankly, maybe this is a new segment?
Yes, I do think we actually have to start a new segment. We'll work on the song. That can be a next month thing. But for now, we will just talk about the It Girls. And we must, of course, start with Charlie XCX's 360 music video, a watershed moment for the It Girl community. Or as that one tweet said, bad blood for girls who do coke.
Yes, but a very specific kind of It Girl, as I think Gabriette says in the beginning of the video, hot, but in a scary way.
Internet It Girls.
But before we get into the video, can we discuss the product placement of the Google Pixel phone at the beginning? That Charlie XCX is able to figure out what restaurant they're at from her phone, from just like zeroing in on an image. And then I guess the Google Pixel will tell you where the restaurant is, which is very surveillance state. But it's the only product placement I've seen recently that I'm like, should I get a Google Pixel phone, actually?
Yeah, I actually love that. So there was a huge cast of It Girls. Rachel Sennett, Julia Fox, Hari Neff, Issa Maya French.
Chloe Cherry, Gabriette.
Yes, the original Amelia Gray. And Gabriette and Julia Fox were also name dropped in the song. Very cute that they're in the video.
There is a skit that starts the beginning of the video, which kind of harkens back to the music videos of our youth, where all of these hot online internet girls are meeting to declare the next It Girl, and Charlie XCX cannot start her song or music video until they do it.
And then the video ends with the reveal of Chloe 70, the mother of all It Girls.
She is mother.
I love Charlie for this. She is a true artist. She clearly has a great team. And I am hyped for this tour with Troye Sivan. I guess I'm going to have to go to the Kia Forum again, my home away from home.
I may have to join you. I mean, that sounds like a great bill.
We need to apologize to our listeners because on our Met Gala episode, we completely forgot to talk about Chloe 70's outfit. And there's always someone that falls through the cracks every single year. And this year it was her. Chloe, I am sorry. So I guess we can talk about it now. She wore Dallara Findaculu.
Our fave.
It was a cream-colored, deconstructed, Victorian-style gown with all of this intricately braided human hair on it. It reminded me of that creepy Victorian funeral jewelry, which is clearly what they were going for. But I just want to know, is this fresh human hair or is this like upcycled, like actually dead people hair? You know what? I love any garment that prompts these kind of questions.
I mean, and knowing the two of them, the answer really could be either.
Do you remember that season of Project Runway where that guy's like finale collection was all made out of human hair and Tim Gunn was like, you've lost your mind?
I don't.
It was so funny. Anyway, go off, Chloe. Also, another thing that we didn't address that we got a lot of comments about was we posted photos from our New York show on Instagram, and a lot of people were like, what the fuck is Chelsea wearing? Also Dallara, and I understand it was very confusing. It was basically just like an upcycled corn t-shirt with like a long deconstructed pink slip sewn onto it. A bit of an optical illusion.
I was so thrilled. You were showing leg that night.
I know, I don't usually show leg. I'll do a slit. But I don't want my whole leg out. You were showing leg too. You were showing whole practically.
In my Vaquera dress, yes. The Vaquera dress that you
bullied you into buying.
Okay, I was going to say prompted me. But yes, you bullied me. You sent it one day and you were like, you should get this dress. I was like, oh yeah. And then the next day you were like, did you buy the dress? I was like, I'll get to it. I mean, there's other stuff going on. And then the day after that, you were like, I'm very concerned you haven't bought the dress yet. So
it was so perfect and it was so Carrie. It had a giant rosette. It was very like Carrie prom looks.
Yeah, I felt like it was Carrie meets me because it was all black. So it was gothic Carrie.
Whereas mine was kind of more like an abstract take on Carrie. It was kind of like everything that Carrie wears when she's in her apartment. Band tees and vintage slips and whatnot.
As if Michelle Pfeiffer from Batman Returns sewed it together.
Sofia Coppola collaborated with the skincare brand Augustinus Bader.
Yeah, can we discuss how it's not Augustus Bader? It's Augustinus.
And you know what? I realized that mentally I thought it was Augustus. Does anyone else just sort of skip over complicated words and just like...
Well, that might be you and I. We can't pronounce anything. But I had this experience recently. You know that brand? I thought it was Annie Bing. It's Ananin Bing. There's an IN in there.
That didn't register for me either. Like, my brain just, like, filled in the blanks where I wanted them to be filled in, I think.
Of course. Anyway, our girl, Sophia.
She made 3 tinted balms with them, a coral, a pink, and a plum shade. And surprisingly, I haven't bought any of them yet. Have you?
No. Could it be because they're $82?
They're not $82. They're $43, but still, they're $43. I need to, like... buy a dress for your wedding and like some furniture and stuff. So I'm trying not to buy things like this. Although the Issa Maya French face gym gua sha torture device did get me for some reason. I don't know why.
We have to fall for one of the online gimmicks that we see. It's tough because these are very Sofia Coppola-ish, right? Because they're not lip glosses, they're not lipsticks. It's basically, what if you want just a little bit more from a cherry chapstick?
I actually don't have anything from this brand. I can't speak to the quality. I haven't used their balms before. This is probably like the best lip balm that exists, if this is the brand that Sofia Coppola wants to collab with. Because you know she's not doing this for any reason other than she wants them to make it in these shades.
That's quite literally the story, because in an interview she gave, she was like, my favorite sheer lipstick was discontinued and I hoarded it until it ran out. And then also, I'm a fan of Augustinus Bader and I just wondered if they would make it. And he said yes, which I love this level of it girl and fame where you can just contact your favorite purveyor of your night cream routine. And they're like, yeah, sure.
No, it's iconic. Okay, also, huge bombshell it girl news. On a related note, Romy Mars's debut single.
So for people who are not chronically online like us, Romy Mars would be the daughter of Sofia Coppola and...
the guy from Phoenix.
Yes, the lead singer of Phoenix. So her name actually is Romy and her last name is Mars.
And you know she was named after like Romy Schneider or some shit because it's Sofia Coppola.
So Romy Mars has released her first single... it's a bop.
It's really good.
She slayed it. We have no choice but to stan.
Yeah, let's just drop a little clip of it here. Not no.
I don't think she's had a better entry point into the entertainment industry. I'm not just talking about her family, but just like the last 18 months of pop culture, the TikTok video that was clearly satire that she did that went viral. Get ready with me as I make vodka sauce as I tell you how I got grounded for trying to rent a helicopter on my parents' credit card. She was her grandfather's date at Cannes for the Megalopolis premiere. She was seated next to him at the press conference, even though she has 3 lines in the movie. And the following week, she releases her first single.
Love that for her. So in a bit of darker It Girl news, Susie Cave's fashion line, The Vampire's Wife, has closed after 10 years. Like, what is Karen Elson going to wear now?
She's just hoarded Vampire's Wife's dresses.
Florence Welch, like, literally won't have a thing to wear.
Something tells me Susie Cave will make custom dresses. But what about people like us, Chelsea? So they said in a statement... despite a period of positive growth in sales, the upheaval in the wholesale market has had dramatic implications for the brand.
Does that mean our entire brand was hinging on that matches order that we no longer have? To me, this surprised me because I think of The Vampire's Wife as a brand that's stocked by a lot of people. But actually, when I looked at Net-a-Porter, it's like they had like 8 items or something. Like, that's not enough to sustain a whole ass brand. That should be like their big order. And if they've lost matches, I don't know if they're still at Dover Street or whatever. I'm sure it's stocked at like every single British like big retailer, but it's really sad. It's really sad. It's like, yes, they didn't have the most diverse roster of styles to choose from, but what they did do was cunt. had an audience.
They did that silhouette impeccably.
People always complain that it was too expensive, but I think a lot of that was actually the fabrics, which were quite expensive and looked and felt quite expensive.
It seems that they built up a bit of debt over the pandemic. And then, yes, it seems like with wholesale retailers closing, that did not help matters.
So RIP Vampire's Wife.
I never got a dress. I was always like on the verge of getting a Vampire's Wife dress.
Yeah, I borrowed a caftan of theirs from a friend for a wedding once. And it was fabulous. They made really, really good caftans. But yes, they were quite expensive. I think we should start looking for that on the secondary market.
I mean, yes. And this is where things get dark, where it's like, well, I guess they'll be on sale now.
Okay, well, the website is just gone, though.
Oh.
And it's fucked up because actually the night before they closed, I was on it looking for a dress for your fucking wedding. I screenshot one at 12:40 a.m. and was like, I'll show this to Tat in the morning and see what she thinks of it. By the morning, the website was gone.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Right?
That would be like if Matches disappeared overnight. It's like, okay, we know you closed, but where did you go?
No, and it's not stocked anywhere else. It was like exclusive to, it's still somewhere. Clearly they had them. I'm sure it'll be unloaded at a sample sale at some point, but very depressing.
Just imagining that line for the sample 260 Vampire's Wife sale. Just a bunch of pale gothic women like ourselves with parasols. And then lastly for our It Girl news, you read Miranda July's book, which I feel like such an idiot, did not know this book had come out until it was all over my timeline and all of my friends were reading it simultaneously. How the hell was it?
It was great. I think it cuts quite close to the bone for her, as it is about a semi-famous multidisciplinary artist who's married to a successful music producer and the sort of unraveling, or the perhaps the evolution of their marriage is a better way of putting it. The sex scenes are crazy. Like, they are hot, but they are very grotesque.
In their descriptions or the actions?
All of it. And I suppose that's true to life in a sense, but I was just like, wow, she did that. But it was a gripping story. It was basically about this woman that, like, she tells her family she's going on a road trip to New York to stay at the Carlyle, but she really just, like, pulls over at some shitty motel a half hour outside of LA and moves into this hotel room and then pays, like, a decorator, like, $20,000 to, like, redecorate it so it's nice. You kind of see what happens with her marriage afterwards. But it's funny because in this book, and also apparently in real life, in Miranda July and Mike Mills' actual marriage, they did take a day off from the marriage every week, much like Big was proposing in Sex and the City too. Like, they literally did that and, like, had other spaces that they would go to.
Wait. We saw her movie, The Future, together. Isn't that kind of partially the plot? Or Miranda July just moves out at a certain point?
I don't remember anything about The Future at all, except for the talking cat.
Right, because they're going to adopt a cat in 30 days. Her and Hamish Linkletter don't know if they're ready for a cat.
You're talking to me as if I remember anything. I literally forget what that entire movie is about. I don't know. But I hope that this turns into a movie. It would be a fascinating movie.
It sounds incredible, yeah.
If you want to read a book about Miranda July's midlife crisis / sexual awakening, this is the book for you.
I do. Is this character that's not at all Miranda July in this book having sex with men or women or both?
Both.
All right.
Enough It Girls. What else?
We have a lot of movies and TV shows that, because of the tour, we did not get to in a timely manner, but we've watched them all now, and I would first like to speak about The Idea of You, which on our most recent VIP episode we discussed Challengers, and I think between that film and this film we are in a heyday of what I'm going to call the fanfic movie. And what I mean by that, Chell, is they're not literally pieces of fan fiction that became books that got adapted into movies, but the general vibe is giving like fanfic.net AO3 with plot ideas like, what if the boys kissed? And what if the hot mom dated Harry Styles?
Yeah, I really liked The Idea of You. Like, it's no Sleepless in Seattle, but inject this into my veins, please. The bar has gotten so low for romantic comedies that even just having, like, a hot male lead is honestly enough for me. Also, is this guy my favorite actor?
It sounds like he's your new favorite actor.
What's his name, though?
Nicholas Galitzine?
He is so hot, so charismatic. I love watching him play a slightly tortured guy in a boy band. And I really hope that at some point we can see him play like a male model or a gay serial killer or something.
Well, they're attempting, for reasons unknown, to do a remake of American Psycho or a sequel to American Psycho. So I think he might be perfect for it. He was also the Bobo Prince Harry in Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Of course, and he was great in that too.
The author of this book is a woman named Robin Lee. I had always understood this to be like literally it was Harry Styles fanfic. I guess it wasn't, but she did write this book. The character is clearly based on Harry Styles. But what I find fascinating is Robin Lee is an actress, and she actually played Roz. If you remember her, she was Christian Grey's right-hand woman in the 50 Shades Darker and 50 Shades Freed.
Oh, wow.
So I just love this idea that she was probably on set being like, you know what? I could probably write something better than this.
And she did.
And I've seen people give Anne Hathaway flack for two things. One, why would she do this movie? And her answer was great, which is she's like, I don't want to be known for doing one thing.
Okay, but she is in a lot of movies like this.
I mean, it's been admitted. She's been doing what, Mother's Instinct, which, by the way, I guess came out.
Wait, what?
I've been seeing clips of it on TikTok, so I'm like, I guess it came out and we missed it. But she's been doing, I would say, more indie films, Eileen. These are films that she is able to do and get financed based on more commercial films. But the other thing she's been getting flack for is she got paid $7 million for this film. And it's like, yeah, how do you think she's able to make a movie like Eileen or Mother's Instinct? Because she makes an idea of you.
Good for her, honestly. I have never been the biggest Anne Hathaway fan, but it's not because of her acting ability. I think she's quite a good actress. It's just the vibes. It's just like her vibes, my vibes, they just don't mesh. But I do think she was amazing in Rachel Getting Married.
Yes.
Slayed that. Obviously love Devil Wears Prada and all of that. Great in this. She's getting hotter too. How did that happen? Did she just get hotter, like, as she aged, or has she been getting small procedures for the last decade and they're all just coming together now?
Chelsea, let me tell you, every one of the aesthetic people that I know, from my injector to my facialist, I go, what did she do? What did she have done? No one can figure it out. She looks incredible. I also think she very wisely, and she's publicly talked about this, after the Oscars, stepped away from the limelight. That also coincides with her having children. But I think in the last few years, she has had this renaissance. She's been giving great interviews. Her style is impeccable.
Yeah, she got that Versace campaign somehow. Again, not that she's not hot, but it just wouldn't be my first thought as a person to represent that particular brand.
You know what's going on with Anne Hathaway is every time you see a video of her, like her dancing after fashion shows, like the vibe is just impeccable.
See, that's where I kind of disagree. It's like, I think that she has her role and I think that she's very good in movies like this, but there's something to me that has always just been off. But that's not an uncommon thought about Anne Hathaway. A lot of people feel this way, clearly.
I think what I appreciate is, unlike, let's say, a Jennifer Lopez that pretends that she's not unliked, there's a self-awareness with Anne Hathaway that has come out in the last few years that I do appreciate. I mean, as my father says, actors are not real people, and they're not.
No, they're not, unless they're like New York theater actors. Like, those are real people.
Oh, yeah, I'm talking about famous actors. They're not real people.
Yeah, no. Also, can we talk about the casting of her daughter? So Anne Hathaway is playing a 40-year-old woman, but she looks 30. And her daughter is playing a 17-year-old, but she looks 30.
The kid is 14. That's the whole back half of the film.
Wait, what?
Here's the thing with the math, and did I go back and rewind? Not exactly. I mean, to jump to the end, sorry if you haven't seen The Idea of You. Guys, it's literally been weeks. The end of the film is basically what Aiden says to Carrie, but in reverse. Anne Hathaway's character is like, we have to wait till my daughter graduates high school. At first, I thought the daughter was 16, but it seems like she's an incoming freshman.
This makes no sense because when they dropped her off at summer camp, I was like, what in the wet, hot American summer is this?
Speaking of which, the film is directed by Michael Showalter.
Oh, yeah. Wild.
Get that paycheck, man.
I know. Happy for him. AKA Berger's friend from that scene in the bed nightclub.
The post-it always sticks twice. He is Berger's friend.
Okay, can we talk about the first sex scene, though? Because, first of all...
Oh, I have commentary for before the first sex scene, but sure, let's go into the sex scene.
Do you think that it's appropriate to fuck someone straight off a plane like that? Because I don't. I think that's rude.
You need a little wash up.
A little wash up. No, I would just go for a good old fashioned shower.
Let's start with the rudeness. The rudeness starts in the scene before. He invites her to go to New York with him.
And then doesn't fly her business class?
At the very least.
No,
if
I
not
know.
First class. That makes no sense. There's a shot of her in a middle goddamn seat. Are you kidding me?
I know. She's wearing this like sheer, tight, like sort of Eckhouse Lotta adjacent dress.
Where did she change it to that?
No, it's under her coat. She wore it for the full flight. That's what I'm saying, Lauren.
She took that trench coat off at TSA and flashed the TSA agent. Okay, to go back. Although the plot is very obvious. Anne Hathaway, yes, is a mom. She's a super hot mom that looks very young for her age, but she's not super cool. And the husband left her for someone he worked with. Anyway, the dad gets the kids all access passes to Coachella, is going to take them. She's going to have a solo weekend. He can't take them for reasons I don't care about. So she goes to Coachella and she gets all artist passes, which, by the way, as we've always said, the only way to go to Coachella. And in searching for the bathroom, she enters the private trailer of August Moon frontman Campbell Scott, what's his name?
I don't know. I can't believe you even remembered August Moon.
What, you're not a huge AM fan?
Actually, I am, because I thought this fake songs were actually like as good as many One Direction songs that I've heard.
Absolutely. His name is Hayes Campbell.
Of course. How could I forget?
He is down to fuck, which is another thing that I find fascinating about the book that came out in 2017 and then I guess got very popular over the pandemic is this author, Robin Lee, basically predicts Harry Styles' relationship with Olivia Wilde, who is a woman nearly 40 with a child.
Yeah.
That the media hates that she's dating this younger man.
Although no one really like thought it was that weird because she's hot. And the same thing is true of Anne Hathaway, which is where this doesn't totally make sense. Oh. It's like she had to be like 10 years older, I think, or less hot.
Yeah, we'll get into the lack of logic in the ending in a second. I want to get into, they go out of their way to say that this movie is taking place in Silver Lake. And when they show her gallery, I'm like, what in the Vancouver standing in for Silver Lake, Los Angeles is this? They shot all around Atlanta. But I just have to say, I feel for that locations manager. I'm sure the locations manager, because when you see Anne Hathaway's gallery, you're like, yeah, I guess that could be in Silver Lake. And I'm sure Michael Showalter is like, and now we're going to shoot the reverse shot. And it's like, it looks nothing, nothing like Los Angeles.
Okay, but they got all those drone shots of the Silver Lake Hills in at the beginning. So who gives a shit?
He's Campbell, Bobo Harry Styles. He shows up at Anne Hathaway's gallery, and it's giving the actor going to Charlotte's gallery who thinks that the fire extinguisher is a piece of art.
Yeah, but it's also giving the charity bazaar scene in the Gilded Age where what's-his-face just buys everything.
Bobo Harry Styles, he's giving that just like hot idiot, but he's like, he's a hot moron. And I feel like that's a distinction.
I don't feel like he's a complete moron. I just feel like he hasn't really had that much time to be super cultured since he's been in the boy band since he was 14.
I feel like they also fudge his age. Is he 20 or supposed to be 24 in the film?
Now that you've told me her daughter is 14, I don't know how old anyone is in this movie.
So after they hook up, and this is where the fanfic logic really comes in, is Her daughter's at sleepaway camp. She's flown out to see him in New York, and he's like, well, I'm leaving for a European tour. Do you just want to come along?
Well, he bought everything in the gallery, so why not? Which is the point he makes.
Oh, that's right. The artists have to make new art now that he bought everything.
She doesn't have shit to do.
I would love to know your opinion. I felt like this movie had more sex scenes than Challengers.
Yeah, I think it did.
Because Challengers is really just kissing.
Yeah, it had more sex than your average rom-com does. Although it was really crazy how she just sort of sauntered off the plane and like he made her come in like literally 5 seconds, like not like 30 seconds, like actually five. I get it. She's horny for him, but still slightly more realism. A crossfade something.
Oh, a crossfade to show that some time has gone by.
That it's been at least more than 5 seconds.
The other thing that took me out of the film, Chelsea, is that this film takes place in Los Angeles, as I've said. She lives in Silver Lake, and the daughter goes to a school named Campbell Hall, which is a real school in Los Angeles. How do I know that, Chelsea? Because I went to Campbell Hall.
Oh, I know. I thought of you.
My issues with the ending, which we won't spoil for everyone, has to do with this one fact, which is no one's getting bullied for their mom dating a celebrity. Let me just tell you that as someone who went to Campbell Hall.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's true. If anything, this little bitch would be like, get me tickets to the VMAs.
These cool senior girls are asking for a dick pic of your mom's boyfriend. Sounds like you're in with the cool girls. I don't see the problem.
Yeah, I agree. She was a whiny little bitch and needed to get over it.
And then they have the end just like that season 2 ending, but in reverse. Why are we waiting until these high school children are graduating school?
Yeah, fuck these kids. They're on their phones all the time anyway. Like, do they even notice?
Your daughter has one bad day and you have to give up your boy band or dick and wait 5 years, which, by the way, it's 4 years until she graduates. Why are we waiting 5 years?
I know. It actually genuinely stressed me out every time Anne Hathaway would break up with him throughout this film.
Spoiler alert, it happens a bunch.
Like 5,000 times. It's like, stop torturing like this poor man who clearly loves you.
Okay, moving on.
Moving on.
Bebe Rende. This show took over the world while we were on tour. I didn't know if we were going to talk about it. And then you saw it and you were like, okay, you have to watch this
show. Well,
you
can't not watch it. That would be crazy.
What can we say about this show that hasn't already been said, though?
Well, what did you think of it?
It is a riveting yet unpleasant watch. Like, after the first episode, I was like, I don't know if I can continue, and then proceeded to watch 4 more episodes in a row.
Say what you want, but it has a strong point of view, and it is completely original. You can't really say it's like anything else. Like, sure, there are elements of it that are like Misery or I May Destroy You, but it's also not really like either of those things at the end of the day.
There's something astonishing about taking very traumatic experiences that you've had and not just making it art, but making it entertainment. I do wonder, and I don't know this man, but I do wonder for his mental state, just because to take, as I said, these traumatic experiences and make a show around them that he toured at Edinburgh, then I believe was on the West End, and now he's made this Netflix series. And what is very clear among many other things in this show is that as a comedian, he desperately wanted success. Part of that and the unvarnished journey for that, as he shows through the series, is what brought him to be sexually assaulted and then also to, in a way, seek out and egg on Martha's advances at first. He now has that through writing about these traumatic experiences. So I just wonder what that does to a person.
Yeah, well, to be a comedian, you kind of have to be successful, or you literally just, like, starve.
Or you're a bartender and get stalked by one of your patrons, which is what happens in this series.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was so smart. Because also, stories about sexual assault, like, they usually follow such a predictable narrative. Like, the crime happens, the victim spirals out, then either the rapist is thrown in jail or murdered, or there's at least some confrontation with the victim that gives them closure and they can finally move on and the healing begins and the film ends. But I just don't think that most people's experiences are like that. And I like the fact that he resisted having a sort of traditional redemptive arc for a character that has gone through this kind of trauma. It was also so successful at establishing the relationship between the trauma and these very like counterintuitive behaviors that don't really make sense, like how he was reluctant to report his stalker to the authorities, or the fact that he was sexually fantasizing about his stalker. He's very real for that.
You could easily not include thinking about fucking your stalker is the only way you're able to climax with your girlfriend after being impotent for a long time. Like, he could have easily not included that in the show to make himself look better.
But I feel like that's such a common yet unspoken thing. But if something this fucked up happened to you, if you had a stalker like Martha that was sending you those emails, it's like you'd have to do something with those emails. The vernacular of Martha is so creepy and funny and bizarre.
Yeah, I don't care how good of a writer you are, there's no way to reverse engineer emails and text messages like that.
Absolutely not. There really isn't. We're also used to seeing stalkers portrayed in a non-sympathetic light. Not that we should be completely sympathetic to Martha. She is extremely fucked up, but obviously, a lot of people that commit these crimes, like, they're not just pure Michael Myers evil, like, they're mentally ill. Yeah. And you see moments of that and you sympathize with her, but then, of course, you're horrified by the way she ruins this man's life.
And continues to ruin this man's life, as we've come to learn. A slight criticism is just this man, Richard Gadd, is our age. And I do think that it was a tad naive to not think that people on today's internet were not going to try and find the real life Martha, the real life producer that assaulted him. But I don't think the woman who Martha is based on has done herself any favors.
No, the Piers Morgan appearance, if anything, just made us respect the actress more that played Martha and the casting. They're like, wow, they did that.
So the woman's name is Fiona Harvey. Within a weekend of Baby Reindeer coming out and being number one on Netflix, people had figured out that Fiona Harvey was the real life Martha, because guess what, Chell? Her tweets are still up to Richard Gadd.
So if you search Baby Reindeer on Twitter, that's just what comes up?
Yeah, because she talked about his show. So I watched the entirety of this Piers Morgan interview.
That's crazy. I just watched clips.
Well, I was packing up my Airbnb and I thought, what better background than watching this? And if this woman was trying to beat the charge that she's not the Martha and Baby Reindeer, one,
stop talking about him hanging your curtains, for one thing.
Well, she's trying to beat the charge that that wasn't her portrayed in the show, and that, two, if the version of her was portrayed unfairly, like, mission not accomplished, because Piers is good at what he does, but he's not the best interviewer, of course, but he's like, well, did you give him a Baby Reindeer? Or like, did you call him Baby Reindeer? She's like, yeah, but that's not me. She then proceeds to admit to every single thing. So in the show, the stalking and his relationship with Martha is not linear the way that it's portrayed in other kind of two-dimensional stalking films where, you know, invariably the character finds out, oh my god, they've done this before and they've been arrested. The Richard Gadd character finds that out early on, but then continues to talk to Martha. And that really happened to Fiona Harvey. She stalked her law professor, her law mentor. And on Piers, she's like, oh, that's just a misunderstanding. Like, she's being silly. And it's like, okay, so that did happen. This woman, if she was trying to be like, that's not me, could have easily been like, yeah, 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 I knew this man at the bar, but like all this other stuff I never did to him, this must be a combination of several people. She proceeded to instead be like, well, the actress who plays me isn't even from my part of Scotland, so like, it can't be me. And Piers looks at her dead in the eye. He shows a clip of the actress who played Martha, and she's like, see, she's British. That's not me. And Piers looks at her dead in the eye like, moron. And he's like, yeah, she's an actress. That's what actors do.
It really didn't help her case.
Her going on Piers and behaving in the way that she did only solidifies, like, yeah, that is what Martha would do. If we, like, extended out the Baby Reindeer series, this is exactly what Martha would do, because she's really Martha. And of course she has threatened a lawsuit, although I'm going to imagine that's all bluster, because it turns out that the lawyer she said was her lawyer hasn't actually been contacted by Fiona Harvey, but they are, he says, they're going to bring a lawsuit against Netflix.
Well, I'm sure that Netflix legal team is about the scariest people to go up against in the world, so.
Certainly if they included real emails and text messages from Martha, that the legal team went through and made sure that exactly what Fiona Harvey is going to do isn't going to happen, which is she could try to sue them, but probably won't have a case. And her point that this has negatively affected her life and her job prospects, I gotta say, I think that's squarely on her.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay, shall we move on to something less upsetting? The new season of Hacks.
Goodness gracious. I didn't even know it was back until three episodes in.
You must not have been driving down Sunset lately, because they have a very aggressive campaign happening right now.
You know what, Chelsea? I haven't, because I've been stuck living in the valley. Now I'm back in civilization.
Of course. I really fuck with this season.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because it's been off for two seasons. Like, it's been 2 years since season two, but like, I think this is the best season yet.
I think so too. The first one was great. The second one, I liked a little less, but I think that might be just because they were on tour and you sort of lost the home base of Las Vegas and Los Angeles that the first season has. And in this season, we know all of the characters quite well at this point. And it's just so satisfying to see Deborah be at a career high.
I know. That was amazing. I thought that the inclination was maybe to bring her back down, but I love this impulse to just have her go higher and higher.
Yeah, it was also so genius how they visualized that so quickly in the tracking shot in the first episode, where you think that she is now once again the top dog in Vegas, but no, she's actually at the Time 100 gala, which is the best way of illustrating that someone's had a good year.
Initially, the goal in season two was just to get back to where she was. And yeah, the exciting subversion of that expectation, she's so much higher than she even expected.
Well, also, we need to mention the fact that both Baby Reindeer and Hacks are drawing inspiration from like a combination of Hannah Gatsby's Nanette and Tig Notaro's famous Largo set, and that they're having these characters sort of have a breakthrough viral moment where they're doing these like highly confessional shows where they, you know, get real or whatever the fuck.
So I think the other brilliant thing that they do in Hacks is they show parts of Deborah Vance's special and her comedy, but not the whole thing, which I think gets a lot of movies and TV in trouble, where it's like, it's the greatest comedy special ever. It's the greatest book ever written, or, you know, movie within movie. And invariably, they never are. Also a problem with a lot of these shows where you have oddball characters that are brought together in the first season through circumstances is how do you grow each of their storylines without keeping them together, but also you don't want to see them apart. And the genius move that they did with this season, where I think they do such a great job of bringing Ava back to Deborah, of giving her her own career at basically a fake John Oliver show, and then she comes back. And just the hurt that Ava and Deborah feel, and that the fact that they have not spoken since the end of season two, where Deborah basically fires her but sets her free.
I also loved the bit in the first episode with the Tom Cruise coconut cake, which we've discussed on the pod a couple of times. Such a fun thing to work in. Also, did you see the episode with the fake part on The View? Joy Behar and Deborah have like a rivalry.
Yes. The main thrust of this season, for those who haven't watched it yet, is that Deborah now has a chance to host the late night show that she could not host in the 80s. They show Joy Behar in a montage about how Deborah Vance wants this and isn't that so cool. And she's like, I don't know. I don't like her. I never liked her. It's so quick. I mean, the satire of this season, like the scene where the stylist is like, we've got everyone. We've got Dolce & Gabbana, and Deborah Vance goes, oh, I heard that they're canceled. And she's like, oh, okay, woke queen, we'll get them out of there. She goes, no, I didn't say I wasn't going to wear them. I'm just telling you about an annoying part of my week.
So funny.
What did you think of Deborah's warehouse of clothing?
Oh, I loved that. And I did love the whole bit with the Bill Blass couture dress that she wanted to wear and all of that. Also, I loved the merch plot line.
Deborah realizes that there's so much unauthorized merch being sold on Etsy, and so her right-hand man goes to meet with Guy Branum at a John's supermarket, and he comes up with the great idea to just hire all of these Etsy sellers for a QVC spotlight. Basically hire them to design for them. Hacks is one of the best satires of the current entertainment climate. It's so good.
Oh, absolutely. And everything with Deborah's manager and assistant.
They do the Jerry Maguire ending where he quits and then she comes with him, but he doesn't want her to.
Also, love to see Helen Hunt.
Oh, that's right. Yes, as the studio head?
Yeah, I think she's running CBS or NBC or something in this fake entertainment industry world.
All right, Chell, I think that about does it. I think we've said all the things that needed to be said about past few weeks comings and goings in pop culture and fashion.
Yeah, I literally have nothing else to talk about, but Australians and Kiwis also come to our tour. We can't wait to see you. We're so excited for our Southern Hemisphere adventure.
That's right. Yes, I can't wait to enjoy a summer in December in Australia.
It's going to be truly unforgettable.
And West Coast, come out and see us as well.
I forgot about them. Yeah, come out.
In a mere few weeks, we will be in your cities. And for those whose cities and countries we haven't hit yet, we're working on it. Or we're not. It's hard to tell.
Hard to tell. Anyway, bye, guys.
All right, we'll be back next week. Bye.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.